Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking in urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this special edition of City Talks. I took advantage of being at the Labour and Conservative Party conferences to catch up with senior politicians from national and local government and the Greater Manchester business community. First off, in Brighton, I talked with Jim McMahon, Labour's Shadow Minister for Devolution and Local Growth, and we talked about Labour's approach and the impact of austerity, how Labour might empower councils through fiscal autonomy, and the overall Labour's approach to devolution and what he would do if he got into government. Welcome, Jim.
Hi there.
We're going to talk a little bit about devolution and where Labour is on these sorts of issues. Just start off, just give us a sense as to, you know, your reading of, you know, where we've got to on the devolution debate, and therefore, you know, where a future Labour government would need to start from.
Well, I mean, I think first of all, we have to reflect on the work that Labour councillors are doing on a day-to-day basis, showing what Labour can achieve in government. They are in power, they are doing stuff, and actually in the most difficult circumstance. And I think Labour now has a responsibility to make sure that when we're in government at a national level, that we deliver on the commitment that they've shown and give them more power, autonomy and responsibility. That requires a cultural change, I think, in the Labour Party. We like to set our vision for the country. We like national. We don't always reconcile that with the local. And I think to work successfully, we have to have a clear national framework. And we talk about, you know, standards, access, governance, accountability, and all that's important. But it's got to be based around the lived experience of people in every part of England. And this is an English issue, an English problem that we have, which is we're very diverse and every community is different. And so what's right in Cambridge isn't necessarily what's right in Oldham. But then Oldham itself is a diverse town. You know, we're a collection of a number of townships that have come together. And I think for devolution to work, it's got to reflect the local identity where everyday people feel connected to what's going on in the areas where devolved power has been centred.
Yeah, and so we've had a sort of, you know, we've had a devolution agenda over the last decade or so, which is very much around, you know, a deal-based approach, you know, places coming together, you know, going to government, entering into negotiation. Would you see that as a continuation on? Is that a kind of model that you would want to see? Or you know, would you have a different perspective or a different approach if and when you're in power?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, what we can't do is to look at what we have now and then discount from that. So to be honest, there is far too much where people will look to London and then discount for Greater Manchester, and then people will look to Greater Manchester and then they'll discount for maybe South Yorkshire. And I think that has got to stop. What we need to do is to look around the world and see what real local power and devolution looks like, but also how that benefits the whole country. And I think we're in danger of misunderstanding, I think, the distribution of power from Westminster and London and what that means for the country, and a fear that, well, if London's not thriving, then the whole country will just fall to pieces because of the current structure that we have. Actually, it's not healthy for the UK for so many towns and cities to be spending more in public services, pensions and welfare than they can possibly generate in taxation in the local community. And so by rebalancing, we actually benefit the whole of the UK, and that's the ambition I want to see. But to achieve that, we need very serious investment. And what I've seen from the current devolution deal so far is that we've had warm words, we've had elements of devolution. But say for Greater Manchester, the housing devolution money and the investment was only £30 million a year. It was a drop in the ocean. You know, it's not even a shadow of my own council's housing revenue account. So we need to be more, you know, far more bolder on infrastructure investment, on freedom. But fundamentally, I just don't believe that councils can really achieve their full potential if every day they're going to their council executive with another round of cuts. And so we've got to put councils on a stable financial foot. But I also believe we need independence in the system as well. Because it's okay when Labour's in power, but then what? We have another electoral cycle, the Tories are back in control, and they go directly for Labour councils again, disadvantaging the people who were in politics to represent. And I think there's a strong argument to reflect the LGA Finance Commission's recommendations for an independent body to assess what the need in the local area is, and for that to be done completely without political bias, reflecting every part of the UK and every type of council in the UK. And that should be making recommendations of what a real fair funding settlement ought to be.
So that provides a sort of stable footing, in the sense, for then for places to think about how they then move forward.
Yeah, because I think councils are done very well, but innovation and creativity also requires clarity of mind.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with the day-to-day turmoil of redundancies and service reductions and public protest because they're losing services, I don't think that's healthy. I also believe, actually, that our communities deserve better than that. You know, despite the best endeavours of our current government, we're still one of the wealthiest countries in the world. I'm not sure that's reflected in the public services that a lot of people receive on a day-to-day basis.
No.
And so we've got to put that right, because that's the foundation of decent public services. Then you've got to have a good investment, a Marshall Fund. So not like pounds and pence being distributed just to try and stop the moaners in the north. We need a proper redistribution of Treasury funds to make sure that we can level up. And for me, that is a challenge. It's not how do you take money away from London, it's how do you bring every other part of the UK in line with where London is in terms of capital investment. And if we do that, then we change the local economies, and that of course means that people are in better, well-paid, more secure jobs. It means the property market is more buoyant, it means demand for retail, industrial space is more buoyant, and at that point, you then have a tax base to draw from.
Yes, because I think, I was going to ask you about that, very often you talk to places across the country, particularly those that are focus and thinking about devolution, they very quickly get on to questions and issues around not only how money is spent, but actually how it's raised, and then you get into kind of fiscal questions and issues. Just give us your thoughts on that, because you know, you've said in the past and around, you know, we need to be careful about it and not enshrining or deepening what we see as inequalities already.
Yeah, so if you look at council tax, I mean, it's the most regressive direct taxation in the system. It takes far more from low-income families than it does for higher-income families. So Labour, the party of progressive taxation, has to address council tax because it's, you know, disproportionately impacting on lower-income families. But it's also hugely unfair when you look at the regional and the national variations that take place as well. And so if your starting point is a fractured tax base, you know, 1991 house values in areas where house values have been suppressed because it's a reflection of the local economy, or even where you've had deindustrialisation, and that's impacted not just on the demand for industrial space, but also then how public services are organised in a local area. You know, the fact that thousands of staff in my own town have been lost means that there are less people in town spending money. That all is mirrored in the local commercial property market. And so, but then even if you move on to local income tax, you are still drawing down from, in many areas, a low-wage, low-skilled economy that is struggling to grow. And so I absolutely agree with, at some point, I would love to see real autonomy and fiscal autonomy and devolution for local councils. But I don't think we're there yet. I think we need a period of proper recovery and investment to get every area up to the level it needs to be. And at that point, I think you can have a conversation about local retention at a more ambitious level.
Yeah, no, quite. And just, I mean, give us a sense. You're the shadow minister for devolution. Where does devolution and the sort of these kind of issues, where do they sit in the Labour Party currently? You know, we may have an election sometime soon. How prominent should we expect these issues to be?
Well, I think first of all, we need to answer the question: what is devolution? Is it decentralisation? Is it devolution from Whitehall to regions or sub-regions?
Is that a problem? Is that a problem? Person you ask, there's a different view. Is that a problem?
Yeah, well, I remember we embarked on this ambition to be a cooperative council in Oldham, and everyone loved it, but nobody could explain it. And it feels a bit like that. I mean, I could obviously, you'd expect me to know the answer to that, about people kind of doing their bit and getting the dividend that comes with everyone kind of making that contribution.
Yeah.
But everyone has a different view about what devolution is. So most people agree with it in principle. But when you actually talk about nuts and bolts on what is devolved and where power sits, then you begin to kind of identify some of the tensions. I also don't think we are honest about where real power is. So if you think about kind of Brexit and taking back control and that mantra, we need to accept that government doesn't hold the power to give away in many cases. You know, if I think about the kind of growing tech data challenge that the country faces and the individual implications that has, I think we need an answer for data and tech for multinationals that is far beyond the day-to-day power of government in terms of tax spend, regulation and leadership. And so we need to have a broader view about where power sits and where power is gained from. But I think there is a demand, there is an appetite in the country for people to have more power and control over their lives. And people aren't willing to accept anymore that they just get to have it like a lump it. And I think unless politicians catch up with that, we'll be left on, I don't think we'd have been part of the conversation, to be honest.
Yeah, and so, are you confident then that, because of, in some respects, you know, the desire and the demand for autonomy, responsibility and power has come out on the back of, you know, the Brexit conversation and what has been happening over the last few years. That in itself then begins to influence politicians about how they rightly have to respond. So, you know, a confidence there that, you know, this will become more prominent, you know, with the Labour Party?
Yeah, so the tensions are, and some of these are very understandable. All right, you have a Labour government. We fought like hell on the doorstep to get a Labour government, but I don't live in an area where I've got a Labour council, so why on earth would I fight for a Labour government for you then to give all that power to a Tory authority that's not going to do the socialist things that a Labour Party would achieve in government? That's a very legitimate challenge.
Yeah.
What I would say is, well, you give them the power, you show the public they're not delivering, and hopefully you get a Labour council. Now, I know that's, in some areas, a much further ambition than others, but that kind of local democratic accountability is important. I also would challenge whether a Labour government has the power at all. You know, part of the reason why I don't think we made progress when we were last in government on housing, for instance, is because we had ambition, but we weren't able to bridge that ambition with the local circumstance and how you actually deliver it on the ground. And I would say, actually, you can make progress now on, say, CCGs and on LEPs, where actually you're not giving power away from the centre at all. All you're doing is to have that democratic accountability at a local level with power and decisions that are already being taken at a sub-regional or local level. And that would be progress for any councils.
Because, I mean, you talked about this, you know, the origins, and you were, you know, behind the, you know, the move around the cooperative council in Oldham. In a sense, it's not just devolving power or responsibility to local authorities, actually giving power then to communities to feel that they can both influence what the local authorities are doing but actually do stuff themselves.
And I think in there is a challenge. So devolution to regions and sub-regions is not empowering people. It might mean that you have a fairer distribution of what's resources are there. It might mean that you have more of a recognition of the local issues because you're able to feed through the system. But that's not to say that Joe or Mary blogs walking down the street feel any more control over the places where they live, over the public services that they receive, over the future that they fear for their children or their grandchildren. You know, so we have got to accept, and it's been said by a number of people, that devolution can't just stop at the town hall. So how do you have a grassroots reorganisation of where power sits, how resources are spent, what the priorities in a neighbourhood are going to be? So, I mean, I would see that around a local plan, a community plan, where local people come together across every public services that's delivered in their area, and they really craft out what it means. So where is the local GP practice? What type of services are on offer? How often does the local bus run? Onto what bus stop, you know, during what hours? Right through to schools and social care, and to really marshal and get a sense that they've got control over this, just right in the concepts of the places where they live. And I think, you know, increasingly, because people, I'm not sure this is always true, but people do feel that they have more power over their day-to-day lives with, you know, the rise of social media, the way that people can self-publicise, the way that people can organise online new movements and make new social networks, social connections and networks. I'm not sure the public services are always at the front of that debate, and I think that we need to.
Excellent. Jim, thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
On our Welcome to Manchester reception, Jake Berry, Minister of State for the Northern Powerhouse and Local Growth, spoke about the government's renewed commitment to devolution. In his words, it helps when the Prime Minister is a former mayor. He then went on to say that all mayors in the country should have their powers levelled up to Manchester's level, apart from health and social care, to give them the opportunity to improve their economies in the way that GM was clearly doing. He also talked about and was keen to extend devolution to all of the north, not just the cities, urban and rural, and referenced places like Cumbria, Lancashire and Cheshire as being next obvious places for the devolution agenda. He emphasised the importance of connectivity and transport, and that being a central plank of the northern agenda, making all of the north more productive than it currently is, and referenced again the significance of Northern Powerhouse Rail and indeed improving the transport within our big conurbations of Merseyside, Greater Manchester, Greater Leeds, Greater Sheffield, Newcastle, really emphasising that the Prime Minister could see the benefits of investments like Crossrail in London and wanted to ensure that the North equally benefited from that kind of investment. As well as talking to national politicians, at Conservative conference I caught up with Councillor Abby Brown, the new Conservative leader of Stoke-on-Trent City Council, And with Abby, I talked about Stoke's recent economic progress, the challenges of running the city, working with a Conservative government, and what she wants from them in terms of more powers and resources. Abby, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Let's start off with just give us a run through on, you know, where we are in terms of Stoke, how the economy is going, what some of the plans that are coming, coming out of fruition.
Well, of course, I think that Stoke is on the up. Fantastic middle-ranking city within the North West Midlands of the UK, population of approximately 250,000. I think we've kind of changed our narrative nationally over the last few years by bidding for big competitions like UK City of Culture. And in general, I would say the economy is improving. One of the fastest growing economies outside London and the southeast. In terms of kind of housing, building, lots of that sort of thing going on. I think as a local authority, we've got our act together in terms of what we're doing, and we're keen to move forward.
And what are the sort of big things on the, you know, on the current to-do list or on the horizons, both, you know, from the council's point of view, I suppose, and, you know, the, I guess, the business community as well. Obviously, you know, Brexit looms, can't get away from that. But just where are we in terms of the to-do list?
Probably more of the same, to be honest. I would describe what's happened over the last 4 years for us as an authority as the rehabilitation approach, where we've kind of had to go back and review what our narrative is nationally and come together as one city and talk about the power of what one city looks like, as opposed to perhaps those things that are going on locally that I know about as a local councillor. And I think what we've seen is the economy kind of respond really positively to that. Quite a lot of inward investment come into the city, and that remains one of my biggest priorities, along with, I guess, really continuing to want to invest into those services that all local authorities want to invest in, children's and adults' social care. In terms of Brexit, you know, it's one I tend to keep away from, to be honest, because I have the most important job in the world, which is promoting my city, regardless of whatever the outcome is.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, we were a strong Leave area, and that is very evident to me still on the doorstep when I go out and talk to people. And whatever I think people's views are around it, they just want something to happen,
if I'm honest.
Something
to get done, yeah. I think that's a sentiment in many places now, isn't it? Whether, you know, even some of the places that maybe were, you know, more in favour of Remain, I think the sense that, and particularly we're talking to others around the business community, wanting some clarity or some end to the uncertainty, because it just stymies investment.
Yes, definitely. And obviously, from a local government perspective, you know, while Parliament has been paralysed for the last 3 years, we've all been cracking on as normal. And so much of the local economy, as you say, is dependent upon what local authorities do, whether business sees that or not. Often, and certainly in places like Stoke, remediation of land, master planning, bringing in inward investment. We're in the middle of all that, even if we're doing it quite quietly.
Yeah. And so, we've, you know, if you look at the kind of national politics or the government, you know, we've had some changes. Obviously, you know, we had the May government for a time. Now we've got the Johnson government. Have you seen much change? I mean, how would you characterise, you know, the government's approach to cities, to the economic growth agenda, to places like Stoke? How has that evolved?
I think we're probably a little bit too early to tell at the moment. I think certainly new Prime Minister has got a different approach, and certainly perhaps for someone like me, that's much more appealing. You want to follow somebody, ultimately. That's what you do locally, and I think you look nationally for who is showing direction. Certainly, again, out on the streets of Stoke, people who I think were a little bit nervous about Boris Johnson are actually feeling quite upbeat about that, and I think probably that echoes out through business. It's a much more positive narrative about us as a city and us as a country, even if perhaps there's questions over where we're going around that.
Yeah, and in terms of, I mean, we're likely to have a general election in not too a distant future. What's your sense that, you know, we hear a lot about, I mean, should we be expecting to hear a lot? Would you want to be hearing a lot about how we address and help places like Stoke do even better than they're currently doing?
I think so. I think we're starting to see an element of that, aren't we? We're seeing the tail end, I guess, of announcements that were being trailed beforehand. So Future High Street Fund we've had recently, we've had Stronger Towns, we've had Heritage High Street Fund, and Stoke Town itself is one of the recipients on there. And I guess what we're seeing, though, in the way that it's been unfolding over the last few weeks is more of a directional approach. So previously, some of those projects were kind of trailed for months and months with not really any conditions and all a bit vague. And what we've seen is ministers come out and say, it's going to be you, and it's going to be you.
Yeah.
And in some of the cases, for example, Stronger Towns, we didn't put our names in. We, you know, you just found yourself on a list, and I think that's probably quite good, although clearly, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't disappointed to maybe see somewhere like Stoke on a few more of those lists. But, yeah, you know, I think it gives us more of a view perhaps for where we're going, and certainly this is the Conservative Party conference, so I think I'm okay to say this. I understand last night that the Secretary of State for the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government talked about my success in Stoke and my increase in councillors, and it was one of the biggest cheers of the night. And, you know, similarly, I've met colleagues here, the new leader of Bolton Council, and it's places like Stoke and Bolton and Dudley that we are starting to make gains. So, I would be hoping that certainly if you're listening, Boris, you need to be looking at places like us now.
And what would you want from a... let's assume for a second that we have the election and it returns a Conservative government under the current Prime Minister. And what would you be looking from that government? Because they've made some noises around investment, they made some noises around local government funding, but we're still, I think, uncertain. What would you be looking for?
I think one of the things we're looking for, and, you know, I understand there's going to be some announcements this afternoon, is around infrastructure. I think, you know, that's started to gain quite a lot of traction in the last few months, the disparity amongst the levels of investment that we've been seeing kind of down around London versus what we see everywhere else. You know, I was at an event last night where the Minister for the Northern Powerhouse said that he got in trouble because he'd called a Pacer train crap, and he said, because they are. And I think, you know, in comparison to how that might be elsewhere in London, I think that kind of level of honesty is actually quite refreshing in a way. So I think the sort of investment around infrastructure funding, whether it's HS2 or not, clearly I hope it is HS2, because Stoke is a HS2 connected city. But I think generally around roads, rail, all that sort of thing. But I also think, I'm hopeful, a return kind of the development of projects that personally I found quite good. They do require you, though, as local councils to get involved with. So I've really loved leading an enterprise zone for the last 4 years, even though we didn't qualify in the end. Things like the Cultural Development Fund, I think, are really interesting ideas that really give and recognise the uniqueness of places. I think we're very much in that place-driven agenda now, aren't
we?
And
we are.
Good to see a bit more of that come out.
Yeah. Well, the reference minister of state made exactly the same comment at our reception, where he referenced the fact that Pacer trains were crap. He didn't think that was a controversial statement, which it probably isn't. He was slightly surprised that there was. So, give us your take on the devolution agenda, because we've heard a lot about, particularly since... with the new Prime Minister, you know, Northern Powerhouse, Jake Berry, Minister of State for Northern Powers, talking about, you know, what they want to achieve. You know, as the leader of a council, a leader of a big place, what's your take on where that is, what the devolution agenda is, and, you know, what would you like it to see in reference to Stoke?
I think it's certainly with regard to Stoke, it's quite interesting. We actually had an elected mayor about 15, 20 years ago. We did it for 2 terms, didn't like it, got rid of it. So I guess I would certainly subscribe to the idea that devolution needs to fit a place as opposed to be driven by a morality, as it were. You know, I think this idea that actually you need to have a single person, a mayor, to be accountable sits a bit uncomfortably. As the leader of the council, I am accountable, and if I'm doing it properly, I'm putting myself out there all the time, regardless of the service, regardless of my level of involvement, to say it's me. The buck stops with me, and it absolutely does every day. I think in terms of the devolution that we're seeing, it will be interesting to see where the government goes. I think with my LGA hat on, we're keen to see a kind of a universal offer that's tailored to whatever your local requirement is. And then it's up to people like me, isn't it, really, to decide what they want to see. But I think, you know, we are getting to that point, as you mentioned, around finance, where actually we need to look a bit more closely around what suits different places. Yeah. You and I have talked before about taxation in places like Stoke, where we have very low council tax bases. And it's great for the government to say, oh, increase council tax. And do you know what? I've gone out there and I've done it and I've defended it. And I'm still here, so I must be doing the right thing. But it doesn't really touch the side sometimes. Whereas actually, I think we can get to a place around devolution where it does mean that strong leaders like me, who've got strong narrative and a strong vision around what they want to do, are given the levers to make those things happen for their places.
And so, because it was interesting, I was at Labour conference last week, and there was a sort of debate around, or a conversation at least, around, you know, the pros and cons of a sort of deal-based approach. It was, you know, and whether that had reached the end of its, you know, its life in terms of an approach, and then maybe the government needed to be a slightly more, comprehensive, I suppose, but also rather than a take it or leave it, this was a, you know, you have to take it. What's your view on that?
Not sure, really. I guess probably somewhere in the middle. Yeah. It's quite interesting this morning at an event I was at. Bob Kerslake was there and he was talking about his time in central government, and he was saying about devolution elsewhere that the moment, kind of the road to Damascus moment for him a little bit, was when a civil servant said, this devolution deal's okay, but I don't want it to distract from what I'm doing nationally. And I think it's kind of would be good to kind of see that reflected a bit more. I think we are seeing those elements of the government recognising the strengths of places and the individuality, but where they go with that, is it a universal offer? Is it coming to places like Stoke and maybe saying, what can I do for you, Abby? What would it be? I don't know. Have they got the bandwidth to do that at the moment? Brexit is still very much out there, isn't it? And it's looming large on what we do. But I think, you know, ever more places are becoming more diverse. We're recognising the need to have economic growth all across the country. So really, I guess if it was up to me, I'd be saying you should go and talk to places like Stoke-on-Trent and see what they could do.
Very good. Abby, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Unsurprisingly, the big themes being discussed at the party conferences by all the politicians were around Brexit and its implications for the economy. I talked to Chris Fletcher, director at the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce, to get the business view on how the city was faring, how he thought they were responding or at least anticipating Brexit, the impact of having a Metro Mayor's had on the city region with the elections happening next year, and more particularly what the business community would want both from national government and from the Metro Mayor post-2020. Welcome, Chris.
Hello.
So I want to talk about, get your thoughts on Metro Mayor. Andy's been in post for a while, he'll be up for re-election next year. Get your sense as to how that's playing out and what you'd like to see from, you know, the candidates as they emerge over the next 6 months or so. But just let's just start off with, just give us a sense as to how, you know, the Greater Manchester economy is going, you know, stresses and strains, good things, you know, things that your businesses are struggling with or doing well at.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much impossible to say anything without mentioning Brexit, really, to be quite honest. We've just released our latest quarterly economic survey, and to be quite honest, there's been a reasonable, considerable slowdown, actually, both in domestic and international sales and orders, the willingness of businesses to make those longer term investments as well. And it's not really, you know, going to undermine the economy completely. I think it is just down to that uncertainty and people holding back. Longer term, businesses still have a lot of confidence in the Greater Manchester economy, and there's some really big, you know, announcements virtually every day about a new business moving into GM. So longer term it looks okay, but in the short term we've seen a real sort of just holding back, really, until something, whatever it is decided.
And has the holding back become more significant, you know, over the you know, elongated duration of the Brexit?
It has, and we saw it impact before March, you know, the Brexit date that never was on the 29th of March, and once that went past, things picked up again. But leading up to the 31st of October, again, they've gone down. We do a composite indicator called the Greater Manchester Index, and that's at its lowest level it has been for 7 years now. So something is happening in the economy there. However, you speak to a lot of businesses and they say, yeah, we are busy. You know, the order books are full, but there's just that little bit of hesitancy in most people's minds, really, about making that decision and that commitment.
Yeah, so, and we'll have a general election, I would assume, sometime in the not too distant future, upon which we can discuss at another time. But also next year, Greater Manchester's first ever Metro Mayor will be up for re-election. Obviously, Andy Burnham is the current incumbent. I'm sure he will stand again, and then will be others from different parties. But just take us back and think about, you know, what sort of impact have you seen from having a Metro Mayor for the last few years?
I think he's had a tremendous impact. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, actually, so I can't really remember a time when he wasn't there. It's only 2 years, you know, 2 and a bit years since he was elected. And there's been some, I think in the last 6 months, there's been a real step up. There's been a real step change in the announcements coming out from the combined authorities in the Mayor's office over what they want to do. You know, most recently, a couple of days ago, we saw, you know, the Greater Manchester Rail prospectus really beginning to put down on paper the first time, you know, the ambitions around having that locally controlled rail network. There's been all sorts of things. The employment chart has come out. We've had the Greater Manchester Local Industrial Strategy. We've had a load of other things, you know, that have come out really driven by the Mayor, really. And to be quite honest, they've gone down reasonably well with the business community as well. And I think it's interesting because one of the things I always said was it'll get to the second election when people fully understand what having a Metro Mayor actually means. And it's beginning to play out now when we're in conversations with businesses. There's a lot more conversation and understanding over what he can actually bring to the table.
And is there always, I mean, as the business community, you know, there's always been a sort of sense that, you know, they've wanted this kind of thing for a long time, in a sense of, you know, that's what they felt was missing, particularly, you know, when you look at other countries in, you know, other parts of the world, but also London as well, that is kind of led by a very visible kind of political leader.
Absolutely, and that's it. It is about that element of total control. There's somebody there they can talk to. You know, we do events with Andy, and he comes along and really engages with our members, and it's great because our members feel a sense of direct conversation with somebody making key decisions, and also somebody as well that's quite visible in not just the local media but the national media as well, you know. So you've got somebody there that, you know, businesses sense they can get behind, but will also represent them as well on the national stage and be making those decisions.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple of schemes. You mentioned or trying to get more control and influence over the rail, and particularly the kind of local rail. Obviously, Metrolink and the ambition to extend that to become much, you know, more comprehensive in coverage. I suppose one of the recent schemes, which seems now almost getting to the final stages, is around buses and refranchising and all the rest of it. Yeah. What's the business community's view on that? Because it's seems to be a big issue. For the place.
It is a really big issue, and again, this is one of those sort of blockers, really, that it is in place, because people say, oh, it'd be great if we had a sort of London-style arrangement, and that's a phrase the Mayor's made a number of times, but there are blockers in place that actually prevent that. And again, when you look at the whole transport system, something needs to change, whatever, you know, whether it is a sort of refranchising model or this bus partnership that is being put forward by the bus companies or whatever. Fundamentally, though, businesses want something sorting out because it's not working, you know, no matter what the technicalities of it are and what legislation needs to be put in place or whatever, it just doesn't seem to be working actually on the ground. And that is a major holdback. You know, the economy in Greater Manchester is strong, you know, despite some of the sort of hiccups around Brexit. It's still strong. It's still going to grow. But it won't grow as fast as it could be doing when you've got things like the bus network, when you've got things like the rail network, and it's just not working for the people on the ground. It's not working for business, and that is a real barrier for it to go forward. We'll be quite keen to see what actually comes out with the bus consultation, because again, there is a very ambitious 10-year plan in place that the Mayor launched a few months ago called Our Network. This is a fundamental part that will either see that work successfully, or it becomes another if only.
Yeah.
We'd have just done that, we'd have had a much better system.
Yeah, and what's your view on, I mean, you hear this again, it's here, but it's elsewhere. You know, just what's the business community's view on, you know, the core of Manchester, you know, central Manchester is doing really very well, there are cranes everywhere, you know, you can't fail to see, you know, the explosion and the expansion of the economy, both and indeed as a place to live, but actually some of our outlying districts, you know, are still struggling. Which is what? How does the business community engage in that conversation?
Well, I think this is part and parcel of that. There's a couple of things behind this. Number one is that local transport bit that's so fundamental to make that happen.
Yeah.
And we've got to get it so people can move around a lot easier and access to jobs where they are, etc. But it's also then around, you know, getting that economic success out from the city centre to those areas where, you know, there are still areas there where, you know, unemployment is a way of life, and that's absolutely shocking in a city region like Greater Manchester, that is the norm, when a couple of miles away you've got all that success there. And it's interesting because I think over the last couple of years we've seen a lot more businesses now raising that as a point and saying, what can we do to actually make this better? Mm. And there's a number of things. There's the underlying skills issues, there's transport, but there's also, again, there's got to be that willingness of businesses to roll the sleeves up and get involved in this as well. And some of that is when we put together our submission for the local industrial strategy, some of that came out in there actually, because I use the example of graphene, which is a world leading industry.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's it actually achieved on the ground apart from, you know, the Graphene Institute and a couple of other things?
Yeah.
Here we are several years after its discovery, And it's still not properly, I don't think, impacted on the Greater Manchester economy. What we've got to do is make sure we can turn those things around an awful lot quicker and get those benefits spread out to an awful lot, greater number of people.
Yeah.
So then the whole really does begin to perform as
and
it should do.
And in terms of, as we said, we'll have a Metro Mayor election, the second, obviously in May 2020. What are the kind of things that you will be looking for candidates, whoever they are, to be saying about what's needed and what's the business community, what needs to be on the top of the list?
I think there's two clear things really that are obvious, and I think they'd always be near the top of the list. One is around transport, and then really does need to be something different done with that. And I think some of that will be around getting greater powers and a different funding model, really, to be quite honest, to make sure that we've got a fit for purpose transport system. It still feels that's a problem. It still feels that that's a wall holding things back. The second one really is then around skills. We've done a lot of work over the last 18 months or so, really digging into what businesses' perceptions are, what they want to see happen. And we've got a real issue over level two apprenticeships and lower level at the present moment in time in Greater Manchester. We've seen a 46% decline. Now, that's not just impacting on business, that's impacting on people.
Yeah.
And you've got the social bit there. So what we're basically saying is, right, okay, we've identified two or three key things. One is, greater devolution of skills powers and skills funding from Westminster. How do we actually use the unspent bit of the apprenticeship levy to make sure that SMEs can take on those level two apprentices and the whole economy grows? So that is a very, very clear ask that we're putting into the Mayor's office over what we want to see happen from the next year's election onwards.
And the skills bit still seems to me to be at least the missing bit of the jigsaw. When you look across the kind of devolution conversation that's happened over the last few years, progress on several issues. Skills, yes, progress, but mainly at the margins. Still seems to me that that's the missing thing, as we know, as you've said, and it's the most important thing.
Absolutely, and this is what businesses, top of the business list all the time. Brexit will come, and maybe Brexit will go at some stage.
Yeah.
Skills will be there, and again, we've said, don't mask things with Brexit and say that's the cause of everything that's wrong with the economy of business.
No.
It's not. Skills issues have been around for a number of years. But businesses are getting to the point now where they're saying something really does need doing. And whatever happens with Brexit, we've got to make sure our economy is in the strongest position possible. I don't see that happening if we don't do something fundamental with the skills issues. All very well to have, the higher level stuff. It's the low level stuff now where we're seeing the real damage beginning to happen.
Yeah.
Something has to be done.
And your final thoughts, Chris, on taking a step back, looking at kind of national, I say national government, but the national parties, Conservative and Labour in particular, what's your view of where, the city's agenda is, currently? If we go back a few years, it was prominent, centre stage, coalition government 10 to 7, 17 or to centre 15. And then it seems to have waned a little bit. But just what's your view on that? And, is the business community worried about that?
A little bit, yeah. I think we've gone through a bit of a roller coaster ride with the whole devolution, the whole Northern Powerhouse scenarios in the last 4 or 5 years, where it was flavour of the month. It sort of drifted off the agenda a lot. I think over the last month we've seen, and maybe this might be something to do with the Prime Minister's background as elected mayor, all of a sudden it's enjoying something I would describe as a bit of a renaissance, really, and all of a sudden it's become something popular to be talked about again. It's never really gone away, but it's never been acknowledged at a government level. I think we've probably heard more in the last month than we'd have in the previous 2 or 3 years, really, to be quite honest, over what the ambitions are for it. So I think the Conservative Party, the government currently, is beginning to get its teeth back into the whole subject of devolution. I'm not quite sure Labour are probably as enthusiastic, to be quite honest.
Well, I was at Labour Party conference last week, and having done 48 hours, I came away still unclear as to whether they had any ideas on, on devolution that were, anywhere near, the top of the list in terms of priorities.
I think there's a lot. I think to be quite honest, a lot of it is around, from a Labour perspective. We'll do Northern Powerhouse Rail and those sort of things.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
Devolution is not just about transport.
No.
And I think, to be quite honest, I think I would really like to examine that in a little bit more detail with Labour, and indeed with the other parties, you know, Lib Dems as well, over what their views are on this, because I think the Conservatives are beginning to capture and regain the lead on this again.
Yeah.
And again, whether that's the Prime Minister's background, understanding or whatever, but there's something there which I think they may have seen that can steal a charge over the opposition parties and really begin to put it firmly back on the map. We've seen the benefits of it. We've seen, you know, in the last couple of years, that real swing towards people's understanding and they want more of it. It'll be interesting to see with the mayoral election and whenever the general election is, how that actually transpires on the ground.
Well, wait and see is definitely the slogan, I think. Chris, thanks very much for spending a bit of time with us.
Thank you.
So reflecting on what we've heard from the contributors to the podcast and a more general conversation around both the conferences, I think the first thing was, it was interesting how prominent the recognition and the connection between one of the ways of dealing with Brexit and the implications and the fallout of Brexit, that devolution offers an opportunity and a means by which that can be dealt with. So thinking about and being clear that in responding to the demand for taking back control, which we've heard a lot about, it's not only a story about taking back control from the European Union, but actually devolution was a mechanism by which places up and down the country and indeed communities and individuals themselves could take back control of the issues that matter to them from what they perceive to be a distant and disinterested Westminster and Whitehall. I think secondly, it was interesting to reflect on across the piece that, you know, the notion that the country has very, very large inequalities between different places in the country, whether you're looking at regions, whether you're looking at cities, or whether you're looking at towns, it was a sort of sense that everybody agreed that this level and nature of inequality was both a political and an economic problem and therefore was needed to be tackled. It was expressed in different ways. Some said, you know, this is a problem about London compared to the rest. Others referred to it, for example, as being, you know, inner Manchester compared to outer Manchester. Others referred to it as cities versus towns, but definitely a broad agreement, I think, across the two-party conferences that spatial inequality and needing to tackle it is important, and devolution was a mechanism for trying to do that. The second area, I think, when you get into some of the policy, I think, in listening to the contributors at both conferences, was that it was a broad agreement, obviously some variation, but a broad agreement that the core aspects of the sort of policy response are in and around transport. So some talked about and emphasised buses, some emphasised roads, some emphasised rail, some emphasised all of them, but all talked about transport and having better connectivity, better transport links between places as one of the policy instruments that we should undertake. The second area, I think, was around skills and education. And in particular, I think there was a recognition that, you know, in addressing the issues that have been bedeviling us for the last two decades, but certainly since Brexit more recently, that a greater focus on vocational and FE education and skills development is going to be crucial. And so I think there was a great agreement around that. And then the third area was around housing. And on the one hand, in some places, you know, there's agreement that housing supply and the need to build more housing was absolutely critical, but there was also an issue around the quality of housing and the regulation of housing, particularly in the private rented industry, and concerns around the quality aspect of the housing debate was the third area. And everybody recognised, whether they were Labour politicians or indeed Conservative politicians, that if we are going to address these issues, that they will require more spending and more investment. There's a kind of softening of this position that we need to figure out how to do more with the same level of resources. I think when you listen to both chancellors make their speeches at the conference, they were both recognising that spending and investment would need to go up. Both parties also, in various ways, promised imminent devolution white papers, although we have heard that before, but both said that, you know, their thinking on devolution was nearly complete and that would be white papers out for further consultation, so agreement on that. I think where there was some less clarity or less agreement was when you got into some of the detail of what they were thinking around devolution, and I'll pick out two. So the first one, I think, was that the Conservatives talked a lot about the need to level up, as they called it. That was the phrase that they used, or fill in the gaps, which in some respects meant that when they looked across England and they saw the devolution on offer to Greater Manchester, the ambition they had then was to essentially allow other places to level up to the powers that Greater Manchester currently has. Now, what that means for Greater Manchester wasn't particularly clear, but it does create a worry that, in a sense, Greater Manchester will be held where it is while other places catch up. The obvious other point that this perspective runs into is that it misses the broader point, is that when we compare Greater Manchester, or indeed London, and the power and resources and autonomy that those places have compared to cities across Europe, or indeed across North America, they are relatively weak institutions, particularly on the fiscal side, but they also don't control, certainly in GM's case, it doesn't control all of its transport system or all of its skills system. So some lack of clarity there. On Labour, with the exception of the brilliant work, and you've heard already from Jim and Jim McMahon's work in the devolution space, the National Labour, if I can call them that, I think they were less clear about devolution and the importance of it, which I think is kind of strange, somewhat disappointing, because I do think it fits with their narrative about democratising the economy and politics, and in particular their desire to move more of the power and more of the resources out of Westminster and Whitehall and into places across the country, communities as well as kind of local areas. So I think devolution offers them a means to do that. I did expect to hear more from them on that. Interestingly, talking to the Conservative and Labour metro mayors and council leaders that were at the party conferences, whether they were Conservative or whether they were Labour, whether they were at their own party conference or indeed at the others, there was a real sense of frustration with that both parties weren't committed and weren't focused enough on devolution. There was a real desire to see more speed, more emphasis, more commitment, particularly in terms of addressing some of the issues that we've heard from Abby and from Chris in particular on what's going on in different parts of the country. So a sense of frustration with their own side and with the other side in terms of making devolution front and centre to the policy debates and discussions. Obviously, you know, there will be a general election sooner rather than later, I would think. And so I think part of what the Centre for Cities will be doing is making sure that the needs of our places and needs of our cities across the country are more prominent in the political debates that will be around the general election.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on Facebook and LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.